Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of the Basketball News Podcast Network. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. How are you, sir?
Doing well, doing great, doing fantastic. Hope everyone's well out there. Thank you, Dunkers, for embracing your bounce. I'm excited to be here. Let's get it rolling.
There we go. And we have a guest. We have Basketball News' own Iman popping in from Dishes and Dimes, also with Yahoo Sports Canada. I'm co-hosting the Friday View show. How are you, ma'am?
I am great. Thank you for having me. Enjoying not watching this Raptors game right now.
We are recording, I guess can't call it late yet, but we are recording on a Monday night. It is early fourth quarter. The Raptors are not having
good time. We don't need to hear it.
Yeah, you know, I just want to give some context to our loyal listeners out there. But anyway, we have plenty of Raptors conversation coming. Before that, though, let's bounce around with some news. Jamal Crawford has officially retired with multiple Sixth Man of the Year awards to his name, multiple 50-point games to his name. Steve, what is your lasting thought or lasting memory of Jamal Crawford?
A complete and total bucket that once he got going, there's not much you could do about. And you could see it coming from a mile away and he'd still do it. And there's nothing you could do about it. Tortured me as a Clipper when I was in Memphis. Really just enjoyed watching him do that after a great defensive possession. And it's the result of pull up from Jamal Crawford. He's a legend. I don't think he gets enough respect for what he did, the longevity. Three-time Sixth Man of the Year. Like, to excel in your role at that level consistently for multiple franchises. You dropped 50 for four different teams. You know, he has as many 50-point games as Larry Bird and Moses Malone and Tracy McGrady and Carmelo Anthony and Anthony Davis and George Mikan.
Did not expect George Mikan to have his name read on the podcast, but I have learned something new tonight.
Are we doing George Mikan slander today?
No. He has a whole drill. He's Teflon. It's fine. Iman, do you have any Jamal Crawford memories?
Memories. I mean, yeah, one is one of those 50-point games that you guys were just referencing. I was talking about this earlier. I went out bowling with my friends and it was a Raptors Clippers game. Didn't think much of it. Late January. And Jamal and Terrence Ross, of all people, exchanging buckets, both scored over 50 points. And Jamal Crawford obviously won the game because that's what he does. And I think just, you know, to the point, yes, he is a legend, but like the longevity, the fact that he was just doing this for what, 20, 19, 18 years in the league, something crazy like that. And just consistently a bucket getter was crazy.
And he looked the same throughout his entire career.
That is true.
Which might be the most impressive part of all of it. But no, I echo all of your sentiments. The man was a bucket. Not going to get in the Sixth Man of the Year discourse at this moment, but he is a winner for a reason. And the handle, I think, is where I really remember Jamal Crawford. That man had some gathers, some crosses. I don't know if you could call it underrated, because I think people generally appreciate how slippery he was with the ball, but he made up stuff on the court. He was always a fun watch. And so that's where I leave with Jamal Crawford. On some not fun news, Ben Simmons is dealing with a herniated disc in his back. Steve Nash talked about that a little bit earlier today. He still is giving off the aura of optimism, at least, that Ben Simmons will be able to make his return before the playoffs start. That just doesn't seem great, though, to be trying to work him in off of these kind of back issues. Iman, if he isn't able to come back, what does that say about Brooklyn's ceiling to you?
I never really thought that he would come back. Like, this is the least surprising news. It's unfortunate to say, but it just felt like he was never really going to come back. It felt like time was really ticking for them before they could all get healthy and get back together. What does it say for Brooklyn's ceiling? I mean, I don't know. Like, what is a play? Like, they're going to be in the play-in scenario. They might not have Kyrie Irving for one or both of those games, depending on who they play. But at the end of the day, they have Kevin Durant. I still think that they make the playoff. Like, I still think that they're the scariest team just because of Kevin Durant. I'll say it at all times, but losing Ben Simmons isn't great. I just never thought that they would have him to begin with.
That's the part right there. I never really factored them into this season for the Nets. I felt like the objective for Ben Simmons was to exit Philadelphia and regain happiness and eventually play basketball again. I didn't necessarily see him having an impact. So a lot of my analysis of that trade was like, oh yeah, they did get Ben Simmons. You know, I'm thinking about Drummond and what he can do and Seth Curry, how he can help. And oh yeah, that also is Ben Simmons long-term. So I don't think it necessarily changes their ceiling, because what they're going to do is based on 1.5 players, I guess we say right now. So it's going to be those guys that are going to have to carry it. Hope you get enough defense. Hope you get enough lineups. But the Nets are who they are. You may not want to face them. You may want to face them, but they're going to cause their problems mainly because of their top two guys.
All right, I got you. Like, it's disappointing. Like, I want Ben to be able to play. And I think that was part of my optimism when we talked about Brooklyn a couple of weeks ago. I'm just like, hey, Kevin Durant is insane. Kyrie is insane. The defense looks like it's really taking steps as of late. And now it's like, if they're finding this kind of flow and then they're adding Ben Simmons on top of this, like, hey, we might need to keep an eye on Brooklyn. And if he isn't coming back, like, all those things can still be true. But, like, in terms of their ceiling, like, I don't know. Like, you kind of have to respect the talent and say, hey, this could be a dark horse team in the East. But without Ben, like, I do have some matchup questions for them, depending on where they land.
So you're back in the point of attack bag with Brooklyn? We had 1 week of this was a build-up to Ben Simmons' return. I see the vision. I'm starting to understand. You see, when you watch a great point guard on film, you have to understand how they set the play up, what they do before they come off the screen. So I'm starting to get it now. Which
unbelievable. I'm not quite in the point of attack bag, but like, he would have been someone that pushed things over the top for me. And without him coming back, you know, the onus is on the guys that are currently playing well, like Bruce Brown, to continue playing well. So we'll see. Like, the ceiling is a little bit lower to me, but they can still, like Iman said, they have Kevin Durant. They'll have Kyrie Irving at some point. And that's enough to scare people. So we will see what happens with Brooklyn. On another note, it is tournament time. Steve, what have you observed over the weekend?
Basketball.
Great.
What have you observed?
Also basketball.
Do you want to talk about St. Peter's? I know you enjoy watching them play offense.
They're fun. They're a college offense that knows how to do stuff. Which I don't want to be disrespectful to other colleges, but man, like, space the floor, play with some pace.
It's too little too late on that. You slandered about 60 teams that just played their heart out all season. Their purpose. I love their purpose. Like, we've had this discussion before on this podcast about college teams playing just to play. Like, we're going to take the first 15 seconds to do X, Y, and Z in this set and then hope it works out. St. Peter's puts that pressure on you immediately. Yes. Like, they actually play drive and kick. Like, drive, kick, shot fake, drive, kick again. Cuts are live and open. It's been fun to watch. Everyone likes a fun underdog story, but they are executing. And there's a difference when you are a team that knows what you can do, can execute it, and you are a team that is purely based on talent and hoping that works. It doesn't always work out in a tournament setting. We've known that forever.
Yeah. So I'm just enjoying while they can. Like, I don't know how long the run is going to last, but thank goodness for a fun college basketball team. On the women's side, shout out to South Carolina's defense first and foremost.
Yeah, what they did wasn't right.
They simply didn't have to do Howard that way. We're not that far from February. We didn't have to do that. But you allow fewer than 60 points through your first two games. It speaks to the talent that they have. It speaks to what Aaliyah Boston does as an interior force. Speaks to the coaching of Don Staley. Like, we talked about this on the pod with Sabrina. Like, I think this can be the year for South Carolina. Like, they have everything you need, really. it's going to boil down to shot making from them moving forward. But like, the defense is stout. They're a deep team. They're a well-coached team. They look pretty good right now.
They're a complete team, but do not forget about Stanford, because South Carolina had a 22-2 first quarter and Stanford came right back and said, 20-0.
Yeah, that's pretty true.
It's tough. The top is tough and the upset's all over the place. My poor Lady Rebels couldn't pull it out against Arizona. I was upset about that.
I'm sorry, sir.
Great game plan, though. It was good stuff. Belmont sent Oregon home, almost beat Tennessee. And then Caitlin Clark is no longer in the tournament.
Caitlin, let's talk about it. What did you see from Caitlin Clark in that game? Because she finished with 15 and 11, but the shooting splits were not great. Was there anything in particular defensively that you saw Creighton do?
Oh, Creighton was just all over her at all times. Pressuring the ball, denial when off ball. Anytime she turned the corner on those random plays, there's a blue defender right there. So they consistently took away space and took away options. Now, when Caitlin Clark had space, she's able to get to work, but it was creating some of those shots, and she had to create a lot of her own looks. As the game wore on, you could tell it kind of wore on her. So it was more of a salute to Creighton's defense than a knock on Caitlin Clark, because she showed the passing. I think the scoring jumps off the page, but her playmaking and passing ability really, really kind of jumped off as far as setting plays up, seeing the defense, being able to make skip passes, hitting the roller, setting Chisano up in the post. But she did multiple things. Creighton was just all over the place and not caring about much else that she was trying to do. I mean, you play 40 minutes with that kind of weight on your shoulder. It tends to add up. And then in the fourth quarter, they couldn't necessarily get their two top players going.
They did a great job of shrinking the floor against her. It was tough. And then the timely shot making for Creighton to bring things home. Do you have a dark horse in the women's bracket now? Like, how far do you see Creighton going?
Not that they can't do it again, but that's very game plan specific in my mind. That's one of those tournament scenarios to me where we had a really good game plan. We executed the heck out of it, but that doesn't always transfer over in the tournament. So we might have a game plan for you, but now we got to figure out a game plan for y'all, and that might not work as well. So that's kind of my vision with them, fair or unfair. I don't want to take away from what they did. Side note, shout out to Lauren Jensen. You leave Iowa and then you come back and just end their season there in a very cold-blooded fashion. But as far as Dark Horse goes, give me 2 seconds. Do you have one?
I do not. Like, I'm rolling with South Carolina, so I'm just not.
Nah, you're going there. I don't know, man. If UCF beats UConn.
We don't have to talk about it.
I'm sorry. I was going to say Princeton, but they lost. So there goes that.
That's all right. Let's move forward. The Toronto Raptors heading into Monday night's action.
What are they?
There we go. We're going to try to get down to get
the dark horse that we're all picking.
There we go. There we go. It's a good shot. But heading into Monday night's action, 40-31, seventh in the East, barely above 500 at home, a very good road team, 15th in offense, 12th in defense. Amai, what did you see this team being heading into the year? Let's start there.
Can I interrupt? And before we start there, can I just hijack this a little bit? Because you did talk about the barely being a 500 home team. I think the 17-16 is a record. The Raptors played like 12 games without, or no, let me give you these numbers. Okay. With Scotiabank Arena, and this is from Eric Kareen. He tweeted this out earlier today. With Scotiabank Arena at partial capacities, basically empty outside of like a couple hundred people, empty arena, the Raptors are 10-4. With fans in the building, they're 7-12. So even with their like shoddy home record, they were only really winning these games when fans were outside of the building. For whatever reason, with fans in the arena, they're losing all these games. And if you look at like, oh, well, you know, some of the noise, maybe it's the competition that they're happening to happen to play when the building is crowded. It's That's not it. Like, it, none of that noise matters. They've lost to the Oklahoma City Thunder. They've lost to the Detroit Pistons, the Orlando Magic, the just lost to the Los Angeles Lakers on Friday. All games where the crowds were there. And it just so happens that when the crowd disappears, they somehow manage to win these games. So
that is weird.
This is not helping me understand.
There's nothing. I mean, like, what are they is the perfect question, because there's nothing there to understand. They're honestly the most perplexing team. And this is another stat that Eric Kareen had. He said the Raptors with at least two days off are 500. They have a record of 7-7. The Raptors on a second night of a back-to-back are 9-5. They're the weirdest team. They just don't make sense at all. Tonight it probably ruins it because they're on the second night of a back-to-back and it doesn't look like they're going to be winning this one. Although it is on the road and it is a second night of a back-to-back. So if you're looking at the numbers, it would look like a win. But yeah, they're the oddest team. So sorry, I forget what your question there. I just wanted to hijack it with those numbers.
Oh, no, I appreciate it. The hijacking is what we do on the show.
Honestly, it is. It's 90% of the chicken sauce. But yeah, and they just swept a whole West Coast road trip.
Yeah. After losing, what was it, three games to just some teams that are fighting for the bottom right now.
Detroit, Orlando, and Cleveland. Or not Cleveland.
Well, not Detroit, Cleveland, but yeah. Detroit and Orlando. There.
Old habits.
The Charlotte game, I think, is the one we're missing where they just kind of blitzed Toronto from the get-go.
I mean, that was the stretch where they lost three games. They lost to the Pelicans by 30-plus points, to the Hornets by 30 points, and to the Hawks by 27 points. Doesn't make sense. Not a single team over 500 out of that bunch. Well, the Hawks and the Hornets are fine. They're in the play-in race.
Allegedly. The Hornets are on the run right now. I guess we can talk about them.
They are.
What an exhausting battle at the bottom of the play-in for these. Anyway, my question was, what were your expectations of this Raptors group coming into the season?
Honestly, they were pretty high. I was one of the few people who actually had the Raptors as a playoff team. I thought that they would potentially... I started off talking big. I'm an optimist. I came in thinking that they were going to be a 5 seed. And then I was like, you know what? That 5-7 range looks pretty good for them. And what I was basing that off of was the assumption that Pascal Siakam would return to all NBA form, understanding that the struggles that he had last year were kind of overblown. And the year before that had to do with the groin injury, and that Fred VanVleet, I didn't know that he would be able to take over this role of Kyle Lowry in the same way that he has, but really understanding that he could fill in his shoes. And then OG Anunoby is your tertiary option. I thought that as a core was good. And I probably overrated the bench that they had. And I believe that they would probably have more luck just because last year was so bad for them. I assumed that the basketball gods would give them, would shine some fortune on them in terms of like injury luck and health this year, but that hasn't been the case. So assuming that things went well for the Raptors, I thought that they would be in the 5-7 range. I think if you told me about how bad their bench would be, and if you told me how many games Fred, OG, or Pascal would have missed, there was no way in hell that I would have seen them being where they're at right now.
Got you. Steve, do you remember like what your take was on the Toronto heading into the year? Because I was just kind of like, this is going to be a really good defense. I have no clue how they're going to score.
Ooh.
And that's where I'm just like, okay, I don't know if I can get high on this team. So like, they've proven me wrong to this point.
I think they've proven a whole lot of people wrong. I got to try and remember what my take was. I'm sure it was bad. Well, no, I'm just thinking out loud. I'm being honest. Honesty is important in this day and age. I think I was intrigued by the defense. I thought the defense would be more ahead of where it's been. Not that it's been bad, but I had high expectations for that group based on who they had. I think my questions were, how's the offense going to work? Are they going to have playmakers? Are they going to be able to execute? Can they handle in the half court? And I don't think I have an answer to either of those questions right now.
I think that the defense, I'm with you guys. I thought that it would be better. I kind of wrote about it you know, assuming that it would be good as I was putting out that article because of their personnel there. And their half court offense was never going to be good. And it's still not good. It's just that they happen to grab every single offensive board. And if you have multiple chances at the rim, you're probably going to get, you're going to boost up your number somewhat, but they're a bad half court offense and they're the bad on most nights defense as well.
It just feels like the extra possessions are really helping them. That's the area that I just didn't see coming at all. Like, I had questions about the half court offense again, like, what is the shot creation going to look like? What is the shooting going to look like? But the way Scottie Barnes crashes the glass, the way Precious Achiuwa crashes the glass, like, they just kind of get it from everywhere. And so even if you aren't scoring efficiently, you're still getting points just because they're just brutalizing the glass. You mentioned, you know, you referenced the piece that you wrote back in November, if I remember correctly, kind of about how the league is shifting in terms of their personnel, how the league is getting not just bigger, but also longer. And you mentioned you referenced the Raptors and the way they're kind of building things out. How successful do you think this has been for the Raptors, kind of going with this 6'7" through 6'9" lineup? What are some of the strengths? What are some of the weaknesses that you've seen so far? How do you think they're going to continue to build this out?
It's been really interesting because I just haven't been able to really be healthy. I think OG is what unlocks that 6'9" lineup because of his ability to just shoot. Like, honestly, plain and simple, having a guy like that, I think, really does unlock it. And it's unfortunate that he hasn't been there. But the emergence of Precious Achiuwa, a guy that you've written about recently, has just made everything that the Raptors do so fun. I think in terms of what I thought about the experience thus far, it has its moments where it's confounding and I don't understand what's going on. And it doesn't really look like they understand what's going on. There are moments where it looks like the court is a little bit too small. But for the most part, you see where it's growing and it feels okay. So like every time I watch the Raptors, I like to get high and low on this team, but understanding that this is a development year, understanding that me watching Delano Banton bring the ball up the court and teams really test that dribble a little bit, understanding that like they're going to be lineups that feature 6'5", 6'9" guys and none of them are going to be able to shoot. Like the wonky lineup that the Raptors threw out this game, I didn't even get to see it, but it had Fred VanVleet and then all wings. It just nobody else I think was there. All that's to say, it's a process. There are moments where it looks really good and you can see what it will turn into. You can OG Anunoby just punishing guys down low as you know, just this crazy post-up threat. Scottie Barnes being able to bully guys down low in a way that I just didn't expect from him in his rookie season. And then you just have Fred and Gary providing space and the amount of just attention that a guy like Fred VanVleet gets. And you know, you wrote your piece about the inverted pick and rolls. And I think one of my favorite plays is when Fred screens for a guy like Pascal Siakam. And if you switch anyone onto any of the Raptors bigs, it's an automatic bucket. It feels like inside. So it's just been fun. You can see it grow, but I think that there's just so many lumps and bruises because the team has just not been able to be healthy.
I find it interesting because that lineup is the one that probably you would assume or would give you some of that dark horse vibes because it has switchability. It has the ability to punish smaller teams or attack mismatches in that way. But when we think about this lineup, it's a work in progress, but have you been impressed with how it's come together offensively? And I only ask that because part of my concern with Barnes was, what does it look like when Pascal comes back? And then Pascal has been doing what he's been doing. And Scottie Barnes has also been doing what he's been doing. Have you been pleased that it's not as my turn, your turn, or is it just my turn, your turn, but we get the rebound?
Honestly, I think part of it is Scottie has, in recent games we've seen it, like Scottie had that 31 point, just absolute masterclass against the Lakers. But for the most part, it feels like Scottie, at least in the beginning of the year when Pascal was working his way back in, fell to the background. And he just sort of disappeared because so much of it was Fred, Pascal, OG is your sort of tertiary option because they had just attracted so many doubles and he was left open. And it felt like Scotty was your fifth option. And now we're starting to see it really work. And I think the large part of what's going to change this is Pascal Siakam's ability to shoot. And he is not there now, but his catch and shoot numbers right this season, I think, are better than they've ever been. He was a better three-point shooter a couple of years ago, but that was because he was taking a bunch. He wasn't a better shooter by the numbers because he was taking so many pull-up threes, but his catch and shoot numbers this year are much higher than they were back then, although people remember him as a better shooter back then because of the style of three-point shots that he was taking. But I think that that's sort of the next element, is like, how much can Pascal shoot? Is he going to be able to take those? And what does he provide in that way? Because it kind of feels like that's the other element that's lacking in unlocking everything. And for Scotty, what I particularly, because I agree with that lineup, that's the one that seems like the dark horse. But what I have been kind of hammering on or harping for is getting Scotty some run with the bench, just because of how invisible he sometimes looks with the starting lineup. And the fact that I really do like the ball in Scotty's hands. Scotty is supposed to be a future playmaker for the team. And the ball is very rarely in his hands when you have both Fred and Pascal on the court. And so just featuring him more there is what I would like to see from the Raptors, just in terms of his development. And it sucks to say that they've been injured, but through their injuries, we've kind of seen him be able to do that with the starting lineup just a little bit more, but we haven't been able to see all five of them there together doing it at one time.
What do you think the reintegration process is going to be like for OG Anunoby once he comes back? Because he, as I've learned on Twitter at the very least, he seems to be a very polarizing figure among the fan base for whatever reason.
Yeah, no, I think the reason why he's a polarizing figure is because people were really spoiled by Pascal Siakam. It, like, in this really sort of stupid way, almost, they think that, like, you can turn from being a G League player to the second leading scorer on a championship team at the snap of a finger, because that's what happened to Pascal Siakam. But that's just not the reality of guys. And so that's kind of the blame that OG is getting, is the fact that he hasn't been able to turn into a second team All-NBA guy in his third or fourth season, which is completely unfair. So I think how OG is going to fit in is going to be pretty seamless. I've kind of called him the glue that makes all this work. He is the team's best defender, and he is a three-point shooter who doesn't need the ball in his hands in order to be effective, because of how much gravity he has just by standing out on the court. So he's probably one of the only guys that I think can slot in and slot out and it not really disrupt everything, because he doesn't need the ball to be effective. And he's just so freaking good on defense.
I got you.
How did you feel about his on ball reps earlier this year?
I really did like it. It started off a little shaky, but it was really fun to sort of watch that progression. Like I said, he's kind of just, his strength and his ability to bully guys inside is always a lot of fun. And it's going to be what makes this team insane in the future, because how are you going to be able to guard both Pascal, OG, and then Scotty inside as well? Because any of them could take their turns with any smaller guy on them. But I think his handle got tighter. I think his ability to finish around the basket was better. His three-point shooting has taken a dip this season. But in all honesty, I thought he was impressive. I thought he looked good in that role. And it's why I think the Raptors can be so deadly once they're healthy, is because you have a guy who has the ability to score. He showed us what he has the ability to do, but now you have him as a tertiary option. And so much attention is focused on Pascal and Fred that it really just allows OG Anunoby to punish guys. And that's what I'm really excited to see. It won't be this season, but hopefully next year.
What do you envision the offensive hierarchy being with everyone healthy? Because you mentioned, I mean, Fred has obviously been an all-star. Pascal has been playing at an all-NBA level. Scotty Barnes has been insane since the all-star break. And you just mentioned, like, you want him to take on more ball handling responsibilities. Like, how do you see that pecking order falling when healthy?
Well, first of all, Precious Achiuwa is the greatest basketball player ever. Can't believe he wasn't mentioned.
Sorry.
Also, Gary Trent Jr. erasure.
Yes, of course. And Gary Trent Jr. erasure. But I think it goes Pascal Siakam number one. What I like about the Pascal Fred sort of pairing, and even Pascal Scotty, it seems very seamless in that, like, Fred doesn't need the ball in his hands to operate. In fact, you probably want Fred to not have the ball in his hands because of how much gravity he has and how deadly he is as an off, like as a catch and shoot guy. Mm-hmm. So I think part of what makes the Raptors, what will make the Raptors so deadly is how versatile they are, not just on the defensive end, which is what we focus so much on, but how versatile they can be on the offensive end with so many different creators on the court and so many different guys who can just attack. But Pascal, I think, is number one. Scotty, you hope will be your 1A or your 2, but Fred is still 1A. I don't know. It feels like such an impossible question because it feels like it's a night-to-night thing, but it very much feels like Scotty should hopefully become that. I just don't know that he will necessarily with the starting lineup, which is why I want to see those sort of hybrid lineups with the bench, but it still feels like this is Fred and Pascal's team, and so they're your 1 and your 1A.
Okay. Steve, where would you go with that?
I think if Pascal's going to play at this level, I think you got to give him that runway. I think Freddie is someone you can always get going. You can use in different ways, but Pascal really opens things up as far as being able to drive, kick, post, pick, and roll, screen. You can use him in a lot of different ways. So I think letting him continue to grow, and that will allow Freddie to kind of have the impact he does. And now you can flow in with the other guys, with the Gary Trents, with the Barnes, and let them play off of what's created. So I think there's a template there. It's just going to be, can they kind of put it all together? So I think they have a lot of different players who can do different things. And sometimes it just feels disjointed. But I think if as they continue to work through it, you see those moments, see those flashes, see those games where, okay, I see the vision. And it's not just, hey, we had 20 offensive rebounds and shot 37%. So I think there's definitely value there. You know, we talk about the Raptors being question marks, but when you look at individually, a lot of these guys have taken leaps and steps forward. Maybe the consistency hasn't been where you want it to be, but, you know, outside of the bigs, you can make an argument a lot of guys have gotten better. Not sorry, bigs. Kim.
The guy's been hurt so much.
It's kind of unfortunate. Oh, we can go to the big man room, though.
As you what is Chris bit, Boucher?
What is Chris Boucher?
I mean, it's a great question. What are the Raptors? I think those are the two. Those are great questions. That's my answer. It's a great question.
No, because I look at Chris Boucher and he has the size and he has the skill set, and I find him to be the most difficult player to explain to anyone.
Because like the Raptors.
It feels like, hey, yeah, he's big, he can shoot, and then, okay. And then, oh, no, he's got the defensive rotations down, then it's like, okay. But he can also rebound, and it's like, right, what's left? Not really a switch big, so it's like, but then he does it for, like, a couple minutes. You're like, now I see the vision. So, I don't know. Have any of the bigs, like, done what they're supposed to do? I guess I'll open that up to both of y'all.
Precious Shua. I mean, like his numbers post All-Star break are absolutely insane. I know someone called it irresponsible to call him a 40% or 40+% 3-point shooter. So I've just resorted to calling him a 40% 3-point shooter. I feel like that must be the responsible take. Uh-huh. Then, but no, I definitely think it's Precious. Raptor fans have been calling for Precious to be the starting five because what is Chris Boucher and Kim Birch? Unfortunately, has just really not had a great season because he's been in and out of the lineup so much. And just Precious is being an absolute dog on the defensive end. And unfortunately, what Raptor fans are sort of nicknaming him as in the beginning of the season was a zero level scorer, which is really.
Wait, someone has to explain this concept of zero level scorer to me. Because this is the second time I've heard in a week. I did not mean to cut you off, but I have had enough. The hashtag is Big Mad, folks. What is a zero level scorer? They are in the NBA. How are you a zero level scorer in the NBA? It doesn't make any sense. They could score layups. That's a level.
But Precious can't. I mean, like, Precious didn't always prove that he could hit the layup. I think that's where it comes with Precious. Is just like there are moments where it was scary times watching him try to do anything, really on the offensive end. But I mean, for one, is the shot is, I joke that like, I don't think I've ever seen a precious shot hit rim. It's either like swish, money, or it's an air ball. It's one or the other, but like none of his shots have ever hit rim. It's, he's never going to be short on a shot. It's never a thing. It's always really fun to watch. But to me, if you're going to ask who's been the one Raptors big that stepped up, I think post All-Star break, it's easy to just point to Precious Achiuwa. Nikias?
Yeah, like Precious has been the best big of the bunch, I feel like. In terms of who's done what they're supposed to, like, I don't know if any of them have. Like, as you mentioned, Kim has been in and out of the lineup. So what you would expect him to bring is just like a solid guy in drop, a solid screen setter, a guy that can make layups at the very least. That's been kind of touch and go for him this year. Chris Boucher, it depends on what night you catch him on. Sometimes he's hitting threes and swatting shots all over the place. Other times he has four fouls and he's doing stuff on defense, not stuff that you want. And the shot isn't there. And even for Precious, like, he's had this kind of post All-Star break breakout. And it's mostly been predicated on the three-point shot. And it's like, that's not what I thought this was going to be. It's probably what he wanted it to be, but I didn't think it was going to be that. And like, he's still trying to figure out things inside of 10 feet while he's shooting well. So like, I'm still trying to get a handle on who does what, at least on the offensive end. Like, I feel like if you could combine all three of these guys, like, you would just have the best, you just have the best center in the East, but like,
the
you
best can't. 6'9 guy in the league.
There you go. But it's all been very confusing for me.
Question. Just about Precious and his inability to do what you really want him to, because yes, the sort of emergence of his, like, of his offense just sort of fitting in with what the Raptors want to do is just the fact that he can, he's hitting 44% of his three-point shots. But how, like, I wonder, like, what, from what you guys have seen, which is how bad he's been inside, I think part of it is just, I never really see him inside. Like, I don't ever, like, has he ever done anything? One of my biggest complaints of him early on in the season, and I don't know that I've seen very much of it post All-Star break, was that if Precious was on a fast break, it was an automatic turnover. I just don't think I've ever seen it converting to anything. But one of my questions is, how much of like the Precious numbers inside, and I'm sure I can look this up and find it, is just him not being able to complete tip-ins. Like, how much of like how bad his like field goal percentage is inside is just that he can't do, like, he's just not been able to and it's usually like him rebounding off of his own miss, off of his own miss, off of his own miss, and then there you go. Mm-hmm. Do you think that that's what's happening? Like, is that a valid theory to have?
It is. Like, one of the things that I remember looking at when I was doing the Precious piece was like, I have to check and see what it is now, but there was like a 10% difference between his field goal percentage at the rim once you filter out the shots that he's been blocked on. I was like, huh, this is a pretty athletic dude to get blocked as much as he does. And it was like one of the largest splits among like how many players. So I was like, okay, this is interesting to me. And to the offensive rebounding point, like, yeah, he's also very bad at that. Like, Synergy had him like below 20th percentile in that. So like, that's a big part of it. But that goes to the larger issue with me. It was like, this guy just does not pass the ball. And I feel like he would get a huge efficiency boost just by making simple passes. Like, you mentioned the transition thing. He has the skill set and the athleticism and the ball skills and stuff to be a grab and go threat. We've seen it in flashes. But defenses also know what he wants to do. And so if they're able to beat him to a spot, it's a charge. Like, that's just kind of what it is. And even on the offense rebound front, he'll rebound his own miss or he'll rebound someone else's. And he's surrounded by two or three guys. And instead of just kicking it out to a shooter for a shot or just kicking it out and resetting the offense, he's going right back up with it into the trees. And like, for him having, I think, a 6'3 or 6'4 wingspan, like, he's still 6'8, 6'9 at the end of the day. So like, if he's not able to really load up, he's getting pinned a bunch. Like, he gets blocked on a pretty solid percentage of his shots too. So like, I think that's a lot of it. Shot selection is the big thing with Precious. Inside and outside, really.
From outside, Precious. Keep shooting from outside. Don't listen to that. I'm joking.
I have an unfair Precious question.
Okay.
How much of it is his potential and the ability that he can, or his ability to do multiple things in theory, but then him not actually doing multiple things sometimes? How much does that hurt him? versus just what he does?
That was like a big thing, at least I think at the start of the year. I think it was Ken Burch or maybe even Chris Boucher who kind of told him, just because you can do everything doesn't mean you need to do everything, which was the conversation. Because I mean, like, I keep saying, like, if I'm going to build a basketball player in the lab, he's probably going to be Precious Achiuwa. He's going to have the strength of Precious Achiuwa. He's going to have the, like, size of Precious Achiuwa. He's going to have the athleticism of Precious Achiuwa. And you watch him play and you're like, yeah, he can do everything. But sometimes he feels like he tries to do everything at one time. So that was something that either Chris Boucher or Ken Burch, I can't remember which one, had a conversation with him at the beginning of the year and was just like, just because you can doesn't mean you got to do it all.
But he thinks he's a big guard, it feels like. And like that has value if you can put that together, but you also see what it looks like when it doesn't. And once you see him on the floor with better players and you see him get the ball with 9 seconds on the shot clock and it turns into ISO series instead of flowing into something with someone, then it's just like, what's going on here? Like the possessions in which he takes like a contested jumper and you see guys spotted up around the arc, just kind of slumping their shoulders like, oh, here he goes again. It's just like, you might want to cut those out.
In fairness to Precious, he does play alongside Chris Boucher and Gary Trent Jr., so he never knows when he's going to get it back.
Gotta let it fly when you can. Gotta let it go. I have another question that's going to be unfair.
What you got?
Why did Toronto get Thaddeus Young?
It's a great question. I kind of like it's almost like asking, you know, like asking for a toy and then your parents just bring you something that you already have 10 of and you're just like, what? But it's like we already have this at home. The Raptors have just decided to double down on the 6'9". 7 foot wingspan guy who can dribble a little bit, guy who could, you know, make a pass a little bit. You want to play making big, you want a guy who can space the floor a little bit, which Thaddeus Young has surprisingly been doing for the Raptors. I didn't know that he could really shoot as well as he has. I don't like it's been my favorite thing because to start the year it was just everyone thought that the Raptors would go after Suggs, and then they get Scottie Barnes and everybody's like, all right, well, I guess that means Pascal Siakam is gone. Guess that spells that. And then the trade deadline comes, everybody's like, all right, well, you're gonna get a guard or you're gonna get a big, and then they go and get Thaddeus Young. And so Masai Ujiri is just doubling down at every turn, and I can't wait for the offseason when I don't know who else is on the market that kind of fits in with what the Raptors are doing. They're just gonna keep getting more,
probably. So like once they made the deal, like my initial thought was, okay, they want to have another 6'8", 6'9" guy in the front court. So I'm with you there. But I was like, okay, I think they just want someone reliable in the front court. Mm. Because Precious can do everything, but you didn't know this was coming because he wasn't knocking down threes at that point. And so he was a bit erratic. Chris Boucher has been erratic. Ken Burch has been in and out of the lineup. It's like, okay, Thaddeus Young can make plays in the short role. Thaddeus Young has a history playing in aggressive defensive schemes. Thaddeus Young is a solid positional defender. Like the Spurs have pretty much had him on ice, but we know what he can do. We're playing like 6 guys in the rotation right now. Thaddeus Young will give us 7 because we trust he will be in the right spots on both ends of the floor. And then Precious Achiuwa turned into a stretch big. And it's like, okay, well, we have him. We have the run with Pascal at the 5. Like, we can just cycle a bunch of these guys in. And now Thad Young is still in the rotation, but it's like, it feels like a little bit of overlap at this point.
Feels like a lot of it of overlap.
Yeah.
When the trade happened, I was like, I get it, but this is like the one spot I didn't want to see that in. And nothing to do with his skill set. I'd love to see him and Freddie in pick and roll, but they just have so many of the same person. Like, I don't know if you're ever going to get the juice out of that you could, because his thing is at the 5. That's how he rejuvenated everything. But that's like a switch with this team for the majority of people. And then it's like, all right, if you keep it on the side, he's rolling into the pocket, but that's not an automatic kick to a shooter. So, okay. And then he's spaced. So I'm like, please tell me you didn't bring Thaddeus Young here to space him in the corner. Like, I know he's knocking down shots, but also, why?
that is where they have him right now. I honestly think it was just like insurance because none of the team, like the team just couldn't stay healthy. And they were just like, we just need a seventh body.
So the theory is they saw the dependable guy, they got him, but then everything else broke loose. And now it's like, oh, we still have Thad.
That's what it's feeling like.
What happened right now when OG comes back? What where does Thad get relocated when OG comes back into the lineup?
Oh, that leads me into my question that I wanted to ask both of y'all.
All right.
So who's the top eight for Toronto when fully healthy? What's the eight-man rotation for Toronto?
You want to go first or you want me to take it?
Yeah, I'll let you take it.
I was about to say Kyle, Jesus Christ. Sorry. Fred. So Fred, Gary, Scotty, Pascal, Precious, Boucher. Did I mention OG?
No, not yet.
Oh, sorry. He's in the starting five. So let me do that again. Fred, Gary, OG, Pascal, Scotty, mm-hmm. Precious, Boucher. Mm-hmm. Fat. Who am I forgetting? Malachi's hurt. I don't know that like Utah or Sphere getting any minutes. Who am I forgetting there? That's eight.
I think that I guess no Kim. So that's just
I'm forgetting Kim. I think what the Raptors kind of do is whoever's more reliable between Kim and Boucher gets the minutes there. Like if Boucher isn't producing, then you've got Kem. And if Kem isn't, you know, healthy or, I mean, he's kind of, it's unfortunate because as when he's been healthy, he just really hasn't been in it since the beginning of the year where he was just grabbing every offensive board for the Raptors. But I think that's kind of what the Raptors do, is it's sort of a toss up from that eighth guy, depending on who has it that night.
It's funny, like Steve asked me this before the show and I was just like, okay. Like, I pretty much had your seven, and then I was kind of between Kim and Malachi Flynn. I was like, well, they do need a guard.
At least you heard of Nick Nurse?
You know what? That's a fair counter. That is a
fair counter. They could have five players, and Malachi's not seeing the floor.
Sheesh.
Actually, let's go there. It's happened. I've watched it.
There we go. How have you felt about Nick Nurse's year?
That's a good question. I haven't actually sat and thought about it. I mean, everyone is really mad at him for Friday game against the Lakers. It's kind of the lasting memory that you have there. But I think the short leash that he's had on a lot of the bench guys just doesn't make sense to me. I think playing Fred and Pascal and OG 40 minutes a night just hasn't made sense to me. The minutes load just doesn't truly make sense to me, especially when you have a guy like Malachi that you're trying to develop. I mean, he's only in his second year. I just haven't quite understood it. And also, like, I wanted to see more Scotty with the bench. I wanted to see a little bit of the sort of ingenuity that we talk about Nurse for. I feel like he's just been so tight with like rotations. He's been very experimental. Sometimes you're looking on the court and it just doesn't make sense. And I kind of love that. I know Raptor fans are like, what is happening right now? How is anyone supposed to score when you've got not a single floor spacer on the court? And it's kind of been weird and clunky. And, you know, when you're in a race for an eight seed or, you know, a top six seed, it's kind of painful to watch sometimes, but I kind of like that Nick Nurse. That's kind of my favorite Nick Nurse. It's when he's been so strict in just playing the same six guys that it just doesn't make sense to me. Cause now we're in a spot where you hope that OG and Fred can be healthy for a playoff run, but you might not have it. And a large part of that is because of the minutes load that they've had to take early on in the season.
Okay. I got you. Like it's, like, on one hand, I'm with you. Like, the rotation has been what it is. And I haven't been a super big fan of the minutes load either. But also, like, guys have just been in and out of the lineup. And at a certain point, like, he does experiment. But also, like, you do want just a baseline level of competence on the floor, especially with how aggressively they play. Like, you want – it's been the search to have guys on the floor that you can trust.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of where I'm like, I get where he's coming from at the very least.
When you just don't see it, I guess like there's things that are happening in practice that we just aren't privy to that explains why Malachi is just not getting a single minute. It just didn't make sense.
Yeah, like for especially early in the year when they were starred for the shot creation and they had guys out, it's like, okay, somebody has to be able to dribble and maybe shoot if someone ducks under a screen. Like somebody has to be able to do it. Like if Malachi Flynn can't do anything else, he can at least do that much.
Yeah.
So that part has been a little bit weird to me. Overall, like I think he's done fine. Like the Raptors are knocking on the door for the actual like playoff spot, like getting out of the play-in range. So, like he deserves credit for that. But I'm with you. Like the rotation stuff has been a little bit weird. So I don't know. Like Steve, where do you follow Nick Nurse this season?
I think he's gotten a lot out of this group, but I think he's definitely decided, hey, this is what we have to do to give ourselves a shot to win, as opposed to this is what we bring to the table. So I feel like they're gutting out a lot of games, as opposed to this is our base that's going to get us X, Y, and Z. I think that's probably been my disappointment just because of what Toronto has done before, what Nick Nurse has done before, what this lineup could do. It's very game to game, which I get. Like, you don't know who's playing, you don't know what's going on, you got to figure it out, and he's figuring it out. They're finding ways to win. But that's where the consistency kind of hurts them against some of these teams they've lost to, where I don't want to say they're just out there, but it's not punishing time. It's not winning time. We're not taking our game up a notch. It's once we play a team that's up there, we're coming for you. Everyone's locked in. Game plan's there. We can get it done. We play Oklahoma City, dot, dot, dot. We're in a dogfight. Oh, no. What are we leaning on? X, Y, and Z is not working. That those kind of things. Like, I wish there was a stronger offensive base. I wish there was a stronger, their defense is really good, but I wish there was just more of a thing where I knew every night what they're going to bring to the table. And so you see it on nights against great players, game plan defense is locked in, and you have the possessions where it's like, why are you guys over helping? Why is Gary Harris slicing you up from three? What is going on right now? So for me, it's been good. I thought you were going to call him Nick Worse this year.
No, I
wasn't. Do you know what Eric Flynn calls him or has called him?
Oh, no.
What? Eric Flynn, father of Michael Flynn. No, what? What am I? What? Malachi Michael? What's wrong with me? I'm tired, you guys. Jesus Christ. Oh, my God. I was like, that doesn't sound right. Nick Nursery. That's what he calls him when he gets on him. So it's Nick Nursery.
Wow.
That's the name.
Yeah. Eric's had some fun this year.
It's a bad shot.
It's a bad shot. Oh, goodness. One more player-specific question before we get into some awards talk where I feel like Iman is going to let the propaganda sing. How surprised have you been by Gary Trent's junior season?
I mean, it was so, like, it's been... He's been so good. And I honestly, like, and I'm so like insulated in this like Raptors world where like anything that like Raptors Twitter says, I just, because it's all around me, as I assume is like the general consensus, and you just leave outside of that and you're like, oh, never mind. Mm-hmm. And it felt like that consensus was pretty down on Gary Trent Jr. heading into the season, which is so odd when you're talking about a 22-year-old kid, honestly. But just to start the year, even in that piece that we sort of referenced before, part of like the major surprise was just the fact that he was leading deflections at that point into the season. And I think he did it up until like mid-December, if I'm not mistaken. So just defensively, his how active he was on the defensive end, especially earlier on in the season, it's kind of waned at points. He kind of gets lost sometimes, but he was incredibly active. And his finishing isn't great, you know, moving without the ball, not always, like, it's not something that he particularly excels at, but that three-point shot is absolute money. And just the gravity that he has and just his confidence and his ability to do it. Like, he had a full stretch where he was rivaling DeRozan's numbers with us, like, here at the Raptors, with 30-point games, like, every single night. He's just been an automatic offense for a team that really struggles to score, having a guy like that, that can operate in the mid-range, which is something that the Raptors really haven't had in the last few years since Kawhi Leonard left, just having a guy who can consistently do that, because that hasn't been a strong part of Fred VanVleet's game, has just been such a joy to watch. And I think the next step is just his finishing ability, his ability to I think finishing is like the one thing where you're like hoping that he can sort of improve. I don't know what his numbers are. It just doesn't look like it's all the way there. But that mid-range shot and that three-point shot has just been absolute money. And for a team that's like starved of guys who can just go out and get a bucket, it's been a delight.
That defense, though, I didn't see that coming either.
Deflections everywhere.
Ooh. Did Toronto win the trade?
To honor of trading the 29-year-old guy for the 22-year-old, the 29-year-old is no longer on the Portland Trailblazers, who turned into Eric Bledsoe, if I'm not mistaken.
That's tough.
Oh boy,
went over the top rope. That's starting for the team. You know what? I think Masai might have won that one. I think that counts as a win.
Norm Owl.
That's Gravis Vasquez turning into Gary Trent Jr. and OG Anunoby. That's how we like to look at that. Thank you, Milwaukee Bucks.
Yikes.
Thank you.
The gift that keeps on giving. I've really enjoyed Gary Trent Jr. on defense this year. Like, I like that he's on a team in which he doesn't have to be the best on-ball defender in the lineup.
Can we talk about that? Because he came in from the Blazers and they were like, yeah, he's a lockdown defender. And I watched some of like the Blazers in the bubble, but I don't particularly pay attention to teams that play past my bedtime. I thought he had this reputation as a 3-and-D guy. And I watched him last season and I'm like, is this what qualifies as defense in the Western Conference? Are there different rules over in Portland? Because I just didn't understand it. So are there different rules over in Portland, guys?
Got a Portland slander on the pod, huh? All right. Let me go refill my water here real quick.
it was just so confounding to me that I'm just like, he was supposed to be a lockdown. Like, this is what qualifies as that. But I mean, just so active.
He's been good. Most improved player vibes or nah?
If you're asking me, I want the Raptors to sweep every award every time. So.
Nikias, too much? Too much dip on the chip?
Like, he should be on the short list at least. I don't know if I have him as my winner.
Who you got as your winner?
You know what? I don't know who I have as my winner right now. Because when we did the award talk a couple months ago, like, I had Miles Bridges as my guy.
Yeah, Miles Bridges, Desmond Main, Darius Garland.
Yeah, there are a lot of good candidates. Like, I'll have to, we're towards the end of the regular season now, so I have to go back through the candidates and see who's ebbed and flowed and stuff. But like, Gertrude Jr.'s had himself a heck of a year. And again, like, him being in a spot to where he doesn't have to take the premier matches, because that was kind of the thing in Portland. Like, I didn't think I thought he was a solid on-ball guy. I didn't think he was an elite guy. But when you have to defend threes, because you're starting with Dame and CJ McCollum, it's just like,
that's fair.
Like, he's taking tougher matchups than he would in a normal circumstance.
I thoroughly enjoy that backcourt duo is no longer together and you still found a way to slander them.
Hey, they have done fantastic things on the offensive side of the ball. I have nothing bad to say about Dame and CJ. It's just, you know.
No, where's the Pascal gospel?
All right, let's move to award talk. Pascal Siakam has been an insane human being since late November, early December, and had that stretch has continued into 2022. Is he an all-NBA forward for you? And if so, like, which team do you see him landing on?
Me?
Yeah.
I mean, like I just said, I'm here for the Raptors to sweep every award. Yeah, move over LeBron and Giannis. He's first. No, I'm kidding. I think I would have him on my 13 ballot, but I don't think, like, I was looking at it and I was kind of trying to see how it would break out. I don't see him making it just because of how wonky the positions are. I think if everyone was set and had to list, like, it's not going to happen. It could happen. But if it happens, then it's because some guards are being screwed out because you're sort of placing, you're kind of tinkering with the positions to maybe allow some more forwards in there. And so you're not going to have a guy like Trae Young make the ballot. You're not going to have some of this guard, Donovan Mitchell, Devin Booker. Like, one of those guards is really going to have to be pushed over in order for another forward, I think, to get in there, depending on where you slot guys like DeRozan or Luka or whoever else that you can kind of put in multiple positions. So I think based off of the way that voters are going to go, I think Pascal Siakam's probably going to get shafted. I don't think he's actually going to make it. I think he'll be one of the snubs. But I'm very happy to be wrong because I think he deserves his spot.
I got you. Like, I'm trying to go through the list of forwards in my head. Like, the big thing, you're right. Like, where is Luka going to be slotted? Is he going to be a guard or is he going to be a forward? And then in the front court, like, what are they doing with Jokic and Embiid? Mm-hmm. Because that's really going to be the biggest domino in terms of the All-NBA teams. Because if they allow one or both of those guys to be listed as forwards, they can both make the first team, which they've been two of the three or four best players in basketball. They should make the first team in theory, but positions are stupid. They haven't got rid of those yet, so we have to deal with this rigid system right now. But anyway.
What?
What's the
sneak that in at the buzzer?
I mean, this is a pod about the Raptors specifically. We're going to throw positions out the way. There's no better team to be talking about.
She has a point.
Very true. Positionless basketball with three centers. It's fine. Continue.
So, depending on what happens there, then that's like if Jokic or Embiid take a forward spot.
Which I think will happen.
Probably so. So
we and say then that's how you get shafted. And then you get some guards taking some forward spots as well. And then it's just like, all right.
Yeah. I don't see the numbers for Pascal, unfortunately. I tried to do the Jokic Embiid hack last year. No one else went with it. They separated them. I think we'll see it this year. But even if not, you still got Giannis. You still got Kevin Durant. There's not a chance LeBron's not going to be on there.
Mm-hmm. Is LeBron first team?
I think he's second. I think he'll get the second team nod. I think Giannis and KD will dominate it, but it's just me. Just a hunch. Who else? I think Devin Booker will get some forward love to get him in there. Jason Tatum.
Yeah.
So now it's like, what's he going against? DeRozan? Kat? See, but DeMar will probably be a guard. Which would help you out. Yeah, yes, yeah, yes. Your only shot is if DeMar's a forward, Pascal's out of here.
No, I assume that he would be. I thought he like would be. I think you're right. I think once you have Jokic and Embiid as you're on the first team, that's already one forward spot gone. And I just think you, Devin Booker, I agree. He's probably going to get some forward love. He's going to make it. I think he's going to make it over him because you have to have a son on there, if not two. I mean, Chris Paul is probably going to make it as well, depending on how many games he misses. What do you guys think? Is he going to miss as many games that he might get shafted, or do you think he's a shoo-in?
I think Chris Paul makes it. He was on my second team, but I think the son's leadership taking over Chris Paul's leadership might bump him to third.
Mm. I don't know if we get son's leadership without Chris Paul leadership. So, you know, technically, yeah.
Wait, can I do that? Can I credit the Raptors' success to Kyle Lowry now? Doesn't have to be like on the court. I could just say Lowry's leadership.
I mean, that's what you want to do.
That's what I'm going to do.
There we go. You got to get rid of the positions. This is insane.
Cap makes it, right? Cap definitely makes it. Is he second team or third team? Like if let's say Jokic and Embiid are both on your first team. Who's your second team center? Is it Kat or is it Gobert?
It's Kat, if you ask me that question.
Or is it Precious Achiuwa?
You know what? You got it. I mean, if Precious can keep shooting this well from three, we have to have a discussion. I'd probably go Kat. Gobert's been good, though. I'd probably go Kat.
Does Donovan Mitchell make your teams? I don't know. I'm going through everybody's teams here. I don't know if you guys have sat and thought about it, but I was just going over it in my head before I got on here. And I was like, oh, it's not looking good for Siakam, but I want it to happen.
Yeah, like I don't think I can get higher than 13 for Mitchell off the top of my head. Because, like, looking at the guards, like, you're going to have two of Steph, Luka, Ja on the first team. And then whoever doesn't make that is probably going to be on the second team. With Booker, I would assume, unless he does get a forward spot. Ah, see.
Man. Or does DeRozan take a forward spot?
Like, he should get a forward spot, but I mean, they've had him on the ballot as a guard, so. DeRozan versus Booker is getting interesting.
Huh? I didn't hear you.
That's it. DeRozan versus Booker is getting interesting. So with this post All-Star break run for Booker right now, he's on the best team in the league by far. Bull sliding. Like, we'll see.
Just won tonight.
That's true.
Against one of the hottest teams. That's why you guys are talking about them, no?
There we go. Steve's ready to leaf off the podcast.
DeMar DeRozan versus Devin Booker is getting interesting. This is where we've landed. Folks, I am confused.
It's getting interesting. They've both been very good. But also,
Devin Booker or Jason Tatum? Ah. go ahead. Interesting, eh? What you got?
That's also interesting since Tatum's been on fire in 2022. But see, I don't know. Like, it's a deep class this year. We're going to have full-blown award talk a few pods from now.
But, this is a preview. Let me buckle up.
I'm just spitballing, asking questions.
So you don't have Siakam making yours? Because it's going to be hard. I'm going to try to find a way mentally to make myself believe for these last 10 games.
I just want to get a handle on what they're going to do with Jokic and Embiid. Because I think that makes it a little bit easier for the forward room.
If they're both centers?
Yeah, if they're both centers, then I think that makes it a little bit easier for the forward room. Like, I think mm-hmm. Pascal caps at third team if he does make it.
I agree.
But then from there, man. You have Giannis, you have LeBron. Like, I wonder what they're going to do with KD because of the games missed. Like, KD's games missed versus LeBron's team not being good.
Equals all NBA first and second team members.
Yeah, I'm just saying, like, who gets the second forward spot is on the first team is what I'm going at. Because we know
Giannis KD probably gets the second one. I feel like LeBron's probably going to be a first team.
So that's what I'm trying to say. Like, they're all going to make the teams, obviously. But
LeBron's going to have another, like, 2 50-point games coming up.
It wouldn't be a shock. So those guys, Tatum's there. Like, then Siakam's in the group. Again, wherever you put Booker/DeRozan in the forward room, that gets tight. Then Siakam, Tatum, Butler still.
Does Butler make it?
Like, I don't know if he does. Like, I have to zoom out on Butler sometimes. Because it's
best team in the East, just going by your logic.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I have to zoom out because I'll watch some of the late game stuff. And I'm just like, yo, what is happening with Jimmy Butler's jumper and stuff? But it's also like, oh, well, right. He's still an elite defender and he's still doing a lot of playmaking and he's still been Miami's best player on balance for the best team in the East. So, like, I can't get hyper-focused on the last 3 minutes. Like, that's a playoff question, not a regular season value question. So, I really have to sit down with this and see. Like, the moral of the story here is that Pascal Siakam has a tough road to making an All-NBA team this year, even though he's been playing at an All-NBA level. Maybe we just need a fourth team. Maybe that's the solution to all of this, since we still have the positional designations.
Yeah. I think part of what will hurt him is just the fact that it did take him until December 1st to really sort of pick up. He did have that time missed with his shoulder surgery and rehab and then COVID and all of that other stuff. So that probably comes to bite.
Yeah, that's fair. How about Scottie Barnes and his rookie of the year race?
I'm all for it. I am a believer. I was of the mind that, like, I still am. Like, I'd like to pretend that I care a lot more than I, like, actually do, just because it's fun to pretend like you care about these awards. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, to me, what's been surprising is, in the same way that I talked about Pascal Siakam kind of being hurt because of how long it took him to really get on, I wonder why, like, Cade, in a lot of conversations, has jumped a guy like Scottie Barnes, considering the sort of time it took for him, injuries, rehab, what have you, to become the Cade that we've seen in the last couple of months. And so to me, it's just like, I think it's a battle between Evan Mobley and Scottie Barnes. And it depends, I think, just the defensive impact. Having a rookie who can come in and be an all NBA level defender in his first season is ludicrous. I know we talked a lot about, like, my article in regards to what the Raptors have done, but I mean, when it's about the Cavs, so much of it just goes right back to, like, Evan Mobley and Jared Allen, but, like, this rookie is doing this and he's their utility knife that makes it all work. So, I mean, I won't be disappointed if Evan Mobley wins it, but what Scottie's doing right now, to me, is just, especially, like, on the offensive end, I think that's what a lot of Raptor fans are kind of focusing in on, is just Scottie's ability to create for himself already and create for others. Just, like, he's handling the ball. His playmaking has, like, improved. His scoring, it's just, like, his ability to do all of that on the offensive end. And oftentimes when it comes to award voting, it seems like that's what's weighed more heavily. So, mm-hmm. I mean, I can definitely see it favoring Scottie Barnes, and I would hope it does.
Yeah, I got you. Steve, do you think, because we've talked about this, we've kind of gone back and forth between Mobley and Scottie Barnes this year. Where are you at in the rookie year-to-year race right now?
I would say they're firmly my top two. I think they both brought something to the table every single night to help their teams elevate and succeed. And now it just becomes subjective as far as what you're going to choose to put one over the other. You know, if you base your argument on Cleveland's success and Toronto overtakes Cleveland, now what do you do? Mm-hmm. So Mobley's defense has been great. Barnes's defense has been solid, but he's also had the offensive production. I just think they've both been really, really good and really consistent in both surprise in different areas. So I think for me, it's a two-headed race that I'd love to kind of sit down and think more of, because I think it's very easy to say Mobley right off the top, but Barnes has done a lot of things. Like, he's consistently been there. It's been those two in the conversation. I wonder how much of what Barnes does just doesn't jump off the page in the same way, or if maybe people just weren't expecting it as much, whereas Mobley may have just produced at a different kind of level that's easier to digest or see. Mm-hmm. I can see the argument for either.
Okay, I'm with you. Like, it's been fun to watch Evan Mobley play defense. It's also been fun to watch Scottie grow the way he has offensively. Like, he's already Toronto's best passer, which is, one, wild, and two, also kind of, I don't want to say indictment's too strong, but, like, you would want there to be more competition than there is in that department, in my opinion.
Fred is a foot shorter than him. Let's give him some love. He's a foot shorter than Scottie Barnes, okay?
That's that is true. Like, you're not going to get Fred slander out of me. So I got you. But what he's done as an offensive player has been surprising. Like, going back to summer league, like, I was impressed. Even when the shot wasn't falling, I was impressed. Like, okay, this dude maps out the floor pretty well already. When he's off ball, he's not just in one spot. Like, he's setting flares, he's relocating, he's cutting all over the place. Like, he already has a feel for this. I don't know what the shot creation is going to look like, but he already has, he's not going to be a negative. And now, like, the playmaking has come along, the scoring, like, dudes will gap him and pick and roll. He's like, all right, cool. I'm just going to slow grind here. I'm just going to get to my spot. I'm going to post you up so you can play 10 feet off of me if you want to. I'm going to bring the dance to you. And sprinkling hooks all over the place. And it's like, okay, well, if he's doing this already, I mean, you want him to be able to knock down threes, and, like, it's a positive thing that he's taking them in rhythm. Like, the shot isn't there yet, but, like, I'm glad that he's firing in rhythm. He's not scared to take the shot. But if he's already attacking space like that, if the shot does come, what do you do with him? He can make the passes you need. If he can shoot and then also score and dice you up if you send help, like, that's... what do you do?
I love the old man game. That's a good point about Barnes. as you asked, what do you do? Where do you see him in like 2-3 years? If we've seen this progression this season, where do you see him evolving into?
Man, I guess in the words of my guy, Samson Folk, like he's going to be a star.
Like star, both ends of the floor.
I think he can be. Like, we've talked a little bit about his off-ball defense this year and where there are some steps that need to be taken there. But he's already, just even in the latest Sixers game, like, he's defended James Harden. He's also defended Joel Embiid. Like, there aren't many on-ball assignments that he looks out of place with, which is insane for a guy that's, what, 19? Like, he can absolutely be a two-way force. I think he will be a two-way force.
One of the top two-way forces in the league?
This is setting up a shot, I feel like. I don't like this.
Setting up praise is all I hear.
I'm asking a valid question. You value offense and defense. You value growth, size, ability to defend multiple positions, do multiple things. I'm curious where you see him as far as a two-way player.
I think he could be one of the better ones in the league, yes.
The hashtag is big agenda, folks. The Raptors, Kendrick Perkins, March 18th. The Raptors really got them one in Scotty Barnes. I'll give about 3 years. He's going to be considered one of the best two-way players in the game. The you fella is just different. 3 exclamation points. Carry on, dot, dot, dot.
So about the Raptors' playoff hopes. unbelievable. That's a good shot. I'll concede that was pretty solid.
Is this like the full circle moment of Steve at the beginning when he caught Nikias was leading into something and said, you watch what the guard does before the screen comes to see? That was, I was just missing all of that. All right. I'm the casual, just sort of sitting back.
It's all right.
Yes, jumping into the fire.
Welcome to the show.
Sprinkle the analysis in so that once it comes the fourth quarter, you see what happens later in the game. It's the buildup.
It's a long game.
I hate it here. But anyway, the Raptors are currently in play-in territory. Among the top 2 or 3 seeds, because they are in range for 6 as well, but being the top 3 seeds, like, what's a preferred matchup for the Toronto Raptors in the playoffs for you?
This is going to sound crazy to everybody here. So honestly, there's a couple of things. One is I don't care for the Raptors to necessarily win a playoff series. Okay. Because like, if this is a development year, then it doesn't really matter necessarily what they're going to go do. They're not winning a championship this year. And like, sure, it'd be fun to make a conference finals run, but then you can end up as a 10 seed like the Atlanta Hawks. And then it's like, all right, that was fun. So to me, it's just more about development. The Heat terrify me because what the Heat are to the Raptors is what the Raptors are to everybody else, which is just a team that's going to bully you and break you and maybe leave you bloodied and bruised. So that's not a team that I would necessarily want to see the Raptors face. The Bucks is who I keep coming back to. I think that they're a really good litmus test for the Raptors. They've been able to defend Giannis really well. They only played him once this season. He was only available for one game, 6-17. Not a great game from Giannis. But I think, for one, I haven't really seen them with Brooke Lopez. I don't know how he sort of slots in, but they've always been really shaky to me this season. And I kind of point to, like, it feels like everyone is tiny. They play Giannis or they play Bobby Portis, and then everyone else is just so small, and the Raptors can really just bully any of the guards at the Bucks play. And they've been able to really neutralize Chris Middleton. I think he's been, I mean, if Giannis has only played one game, it feels like Chris Middleton has played none, even though he was available for all three. It's just fun to take shots. Yikes. But
all right.
But yeah, so to me, the Bucks are a great litmus test. I think that we saw what they could, I think, the Sixers could be fun. I mean, like, I was kind of down on that because it's like, okay, you don't have a center. You don't have anyone to guard Embiid. That's not really, like, sharing anything. I don't know if that really exposes too much from the Raptors. I don't know. Maybe you guys can sort of add to that. But it felt like, all right, yeah, we know what their weakness is going to be in a series like that. But I think I think the Bucks could be a really scary one, just because I always point to, like, the reason why the Bucks scared me in the past is because there was no one on the Raptors that felt confident getting inside because of how terrifying Brooke Lopez was inside. The only way that the Raptors would be able to beat the Bucks in any game was by shooting from outside. And that's why they brought in Marc Gasol, was to improve their floor spacing. That's what sort of made it work. But in the three games that the Raptors have played them this year, it just feels like every single guard is funneling guys directly into Bobby Portis, and that doesn't terrify anybody. Mm-hmm. So on the one hand, it's like the Bucks aren't as scary as I feel like they should be. So the Raptors actually have a chance in that series, but I don't expect them to win. So it still won't hurt even if they do lose that. It feels like it's a winnable series, but also a good litmus test. And that's why I picked them. Although, you know, even though they just lost to the Bulls are not scaring anybody. I don't know if that they're considered a top three team. They're probably going to fall into that 6-7 range too. But yeah, so of the top three teams, if we're thinking that's the Sixers, Heat, and the Bucks, that's a team that I'd want to face. The Celtics, I want no parts of.
That's actually funny, because in my notes, I was like, do any of the top three teams actually want to face Toronto? And why is the answer Boston?
Yeah, Boston, I want no parts of.
Yeah, I think Boston has become that team for everyone at this point. Like, who wants to deal with that defense on purpose? Like, I don't. Like, this is, it's insane. Like, I was watching that Nuggets game, which Grant Williams getting not even a chase down block, Grant Williams just blocking Jokic in single cover. And I was like, what's happening exactly in this basketball game?
DeAndre Jordan did last week. Come on.
Okay. We don't have to do this. Oh, no. There's the DJ mentioned on the podcast.
So we're all in on the Celtics, right? Okay.
Oh, here we go.
I'm asking a question.
It's a reverse jinx. I'm all for it. Please go all in. Double down.
How do you think the rest of the Eastern Conference should feel?
This is terrible. I don't think they should feel great about facing Boston.
I'll let you slide. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
There was one sitting right here. It's right in front of me. March 20th. Don't worry about it. The Raptors are very interesting for the top three. I don't know how much Miami really wants to see them, if only because they have to size to bother some of their guys, mainly a Tyler Hero. And they have the people to defend Jimmy and Bam to where they can bog Miami down. So now this could just turn into a battle of zones, could be a disgusting matchup. You never know, but that intrigues me. When it comes to Philadelphia, my thought is you have size and activity against James Harden. Embiid's going to either be Embiid or you can try and game plan against him. I think they can bother Tobias Harris. And I think that's important if you want to beat Philadelphia. If you can bug Maxey and Harris, then things get interesting. And the Bucks matchup is... I don't know if Grayson Allen puts fear in Toronto's heart. I don't... It's a lot of Giannis, though. But I don't... That could be one of those early round series where maybe Milwaukee hasn't quite done what they're supposed to do yet. Remember last year they faced Miami and they were just absolutely prepared for any part of that series.
Yes.
It's a little different when you have this kind of size, length, switchability. But then again, all of this is based on Toronto doing the things they're supposed to do and not overhelping and not being able to score. So I don't know. Again, as always, I'm all over the place with this team.
It seems on brand. Like, I look at, like, the Miami one, I think Toronto's like, okay, we can probably do some things here. Because as you mentioned,
someone's like, going to die. Why do you guys want a series that will lead to a death?
I don't know if I want that, but if I'm Toronto, say, okay, which of these three teams do I have the best shot at winning against? Like, I think it is Miami, because they have, at least individually, they have answers for their guys. They have size.
Fair.
They can throw length on Jimmy Butler and just switch all over the place. Like, OG Anunoby switching Bam and Duncan Robinson handoffs has been like the bane of their existence for like 2 years. So, like, they can muck that up. And as someone that was in Miami for that triple overtime game,
Oh my God.
I'm still upset about that, but whatever. Like, I think that's
the beautiful one. Game. What is there to be upset by? Amazing game.
It was objectively a very good basketball game, but also I had a 6 a.m. flight the next morning. And so I'm just like, yo, somebody's got to end this.
I thought it was the Club Live appearance that got knocked off.
Here we go. But no, like, I think Miami's the one. Philly is the one that I would have an eye on as well.
Not Milwaukee.
With Brooke back, like,
can I ask you guys, as someone who hasn't seen so much of, like, Brooke back, is Brooke back, or is, like, a 30-something-year-old guy coming off of back problems back?
In between.
Yeah. But he's still very much trying to find, in the games I watched anyway, he's still very much trying to find himself offensively. Like, he's looked pretty solid in drop from what I've seen.
Yeah.
Like, he's further.
It was terrifying before.
Yeah. Like, he's further ahead defensively than I thought he would be off of that kind of injury. Like, I don't know if he reaches all defense level or anything like that, but, like, he's been firmly good in my opinion. Okay. But Philly's interesting because Toronto does have a bunch of size and switchability and can shrink the floor. But, like, also, Toronto wants to run. And I don't trust Philadelphia's transition defense at all. And I think that's something, if they can find a way to force turnovers on Embiid, or if they can frustrate James Harden and kind of keep him out of the paint, which, again, they have a bunch of rangy defenders, kind of force him into those step backs. You get some long misses and run, like, you may have an avenue there.
I'm going to take this pot off the tracks.
Okay.
Who do you trust Philadelphia to beat?
I think they would beat Cleveland. They would beat Chicago for sure. Like, I have to see what the seedings are. But, like, there are teams I trust Philadelphia to beat. I know where this is going. I see the shot that you're trying to take. The pump fake did not work.
Hey, you stayed down. I had to swing it back to the perimeter. It happens.
There we go. We play disciplined defense on this side. But all right. I don't think I did. You have any lingering Toronto thoughts? We can get out of here.
Greatest Raptor of all time.
Yeah. Why was that a discussion on the timeline again today?
Bodog, I don't know. Some account decided, a gambling account decided to tweet out the top 10 greatest Raptors of all time for engagement, I'm guessing, and it worked. But yeah, Trace McGrady is not a top 10 Raptor. What are we doing? Why are we doing it? What does that even mean? But yeah, greatest Raptor of all time is Kyle Lowry. But, like, the idea that T-Mac would even be on a top 10 list is ludicrous.
Well, T-Mac
or a top 20 list or a top 50 list.
All right.
Or a top 70 list or a top 100 list. I mean, it just doesn't make sense.
Yeesh.
Wow. I'm just like, it's no hate. It's not hate, but, like, you can't credit someone for what they did in Houston and Orlando. That's like Hakeem Olajuwon, greatest Raptor of all time. Like, no, nobody's going to say that. No one's coming out with that take. So the reverse shouldn't work either.
Wow. This is a lot of T-Max land on this here podcast. I never was thought I'd see today.
Was Jose Calderon on that list?
He wasn't, and that upset a lot of people.
Why would he not be on that list?
That's my thing. I think he's a top 10 greatest Raptor because the list included guys like Tracy McGrady. That's why he was not on the list. So Jose wasn't on the list. They had Antonio Davis ahead of Pascal Siakam. None of it made sense.
Yeah, that sounds like
none of it made sense.
Yeah, that sounds like an engagement list.
Yeah, 100%.
A question for you. Like, we know how you feel about Kyle Lowry. Where does Kawhi Leonard slot on your personal greatest of all time list?
So I kind of put it into tiers. I think that, like, I think I can maybe even divide my tiers by a little bit. I had the first tier is Kyle, DeMar, and Vince. But I think maybe the first tier is Kyle and Vince. And I think the second tier is DeMar and Kawhi. And the reason for that is, like, Kawhi could be the best. Like, there's always that conversation of, like, best versus greatest. Like, LeBron James is the best Miami Heat, but Dwayne Wade is the greatest Miami Heat. And I think that's the conversation. It's hard to make a guy who played 60 plus games, 60 something games for a team in the regular season, the greatest player in franchise history. That just doesn't make much sense, but he did win a championship. So I still think he's in like that top tier. So I'd probably put like Vince and Kyle, and then like DeMar and Kawhi, and then the rest of the guys, which includes like Bosch and Siakam and everybody else.
Okay. All right. That's fair. Steve, where would you have Kawhi?
Three.
Ooh. So DeMar's four. Or yes. Vince is four.
Vince is three.
So Kawhi and Vince are the same person.
Kawhi's two.
Oh, okay.
Oh, all right.
Okay. So, like, how much does cultural impact matter? Because, like, there is always the debate that the Raptors could have gone the way of the Memphis Grizzlies without a Vince Carter.
I think his impact in that uniform, not just with the dunk contest, but when he had that spree of buzzer beaters, I think there's a match there. To where, especially with time, people may forget how it ended. So I think he'll always be up there. I think Lowry will get that kind of credit. So I think that will always push Vince up there in a way that it may not push Chris Bosh, fair or unfair.
Okay, no, I agree. Like, to me, Vince is my number two. I'm saying, like, you had Vince below Kawhi. So I'm saying, I have Vince as number two, just, like, solidified forever because of the cultural impact. But championship beats that.
Yeah,
that's fair.
I got to give him that for that run.
That's fair.
I think it's hard. Your point made a ton of sense, but I can't not give him, like, that was a lot.
That's fair. No, that's fair. That's fair. That's fair. And can I ask, because you mentioned the Bosch fair or unfair. This is to both of you guys, and I'm keeping you guys for long. I'm sorry, but I just need to know, because I always think that, like, Raptor fans underrate Bosch's tenure with the Raptors, and non-Raptor fans overrate Bosch's tenure with the Raptors. So where would you put Bosch on this hypothetical list that you have?
Like, for me, like, Bosch is five to me.
Behind Kawhi and DeRozan as your 3-4, or like some version. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Like, I think that's where I land there. Cause, like, he was kind of like, he was the bridge to Lowry DeRozan in a way.
Yeah. Yeah.
All-star appearances. He was very good there. Like, the playoff success wasn't there. But, like, I feel like he was good. Like, I don't know. Like, we've had this conversation off air before. I'm just like, what is this indifference to Chris Bosh? Where is it coming
from? It's a little bit like, okay, so part of it is that he's never had a Kyle Lowry, which is like kind of the benefit that DeMar DeRozan has in being remembered, is that he wasn't the best player on the team. So the team was just successful. But, like, because Chris Bosh became this, like, small ball five, he played the five, he was a defensive anchor on a championship team, he spaced the floor, and he, like, changed basketball in so many ways. He's remembered as being so great that people forget that he was Stretch DeRozan on the Raptors. Like, how is he any different? What was the difference? You're laughing, but, like, how were their games? Like, to me, it's like, we remember Bosch as this guy who could play D in space of floor and do that at the five, but, like, he was power forward DeMar DeRozan, which then became, and then DeMar ends up playing with LaMarcus Aldridge, and it's unfortunate that DeMar just keeps going to his same archetype no matter where he's at. But yeah, that's all he was, and I think that, like, that gets forgotten because of how good he was post his Raptors time. And that's not to say he was bad Raptors time. DeMar DeRozan was great as a Raptor, but I think DeMar's highs, as in his final season with the Raptors, I think that outweighs Chris Bosh's high, which was his final season, his final year with the Raptors.
I think outside perspective, not my opinion, but I think DeMar probably gets dinged from the outside for hashtag playoffs.
That's fair.
And Bosh probably gets raised up because hashtag he didn't have any help. Just looking from a
that's fair.
Outer Zoom. For me, they're on the same tier. So for me, I have Bosch and I throw Damon Stoudemire in there, Pascal. I put them on that tier like right there. And then it's Mo Pete. And then it's Jose Calderon.
Wow. Jose below Mo Pete. That's also a controversial take.
I have managed to offend Canada every week, so it's fine.
It's part of the bit at this point. All right, Yvonne, thank you for hopping on with us. Where can the people find you and your work?
Dishes and Dimes, Basketball News, Yahoo Sports Canada, and something special and secret, top secret, that will be coming soon.
All right, there we go. All right. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Dunker Spot. We are all... What did I do?
Forgot how to end the pod? What happened?
Second week in a row. It's just...
You need me to take over again?
No. Oh, goodness. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Dunker Spot. If you have not already, please subscribe to us. Leave us a review. We're on all streaming platforms. You can find us on Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your pods. You can find us. You can follow me on Twitter at NikaiasNBA. You can follow Steve on Twitter at SteveJones20. And with that, we will catch y'all later.
Wendy and Gabriel or Stanley Johnson? I'm serious.